This is District Sentinel Radio, your daily newscast featuring reporting from the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
Eat me, the other Sam.
We're in Washington, D.C. in the Harper is a Good Girl studios. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. Subscribers on Patreon, stand by later tonight. The polls open for the garbage can. Get your votes in before Friday's Sentinel cast.
Boy, a lot of, as with every week, a lot of hot contenders there.
Yes, we have the hottest contenders.
Do you think it'll be special election related? Do you think it'll be Obamacare repeal related?
Honestly, who I want to win, and this happened more over the weekend, was Posobiec in the gang for like flipping out over Shakespeare. But I don't know. We'll see if they win.
Outrageous. This Hamlet character is taking on this authority figure in a clear attack on the president.
And it's just such a giant grift, like about how they had the domain registered to free this girl and everything before she even got arrested.
Oh, shit.
Anyways, speaking of grifts, if you listen to this show regularly and you like it, consider dropping by our Patreon and becoming a subscriber. $5 a month gets you the Sentinel cast and other bonus content. But you can subscribe for as little as $1 a month and at least be able to participate in the garbage can's democratic process. Really, just $1 a month. If we can get each of our daily newscast listeners to donate as little as $1 a month, we'd be well on our way to keeping this dang operation sustainable, maybe even growing it.
Yeah.
So that's patreon.com/districtsentinel. Give us a dollar.
Yeah, we're getting closer to planning our tour, hammering out details of our tour. Wanted to say it on the radio.
Sources point to maybe an end of July trip to
the Rust Belt.
The Rust Belt.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that, but stay tuned for more details.
And hopefully a show at some point in D.C.
Yeah.
We
had a little issue with our first venue, but we're looking into a second venue right now.
Yeah, the second venue, I'm still waiting for an email back from the venue guy.
But this would be an exciting venue if we can get it.
Yeah, would be. They sell beer.
Yeah. All right. It's Thursday, June 22nd, 2017. Here's the news. The Senate healthcare bill is out. It's still being considered a draft, but for the first time, the public and lawmakers can now see what Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is trying to do here. The bill, known as the Better Care Reconciliation Act, mirrors broad contours of the House-passed American Healthcare Act, the AHCA. It repeals many of the taxes on the wealthy that help finance the Affordable Care Act. The legislation would also do away with the individual mandate that required Americans to purchase health insurance. And it allows states to opt out of insurance market regulations that require companies to offer basic benefits and prevents them from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions. Both bills also would defund Planned Parenthood for 1 year. In some significant areas, however, the Senate proposal differs from the House. While both bills eliminate Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, the Senate plan waits longer to phase it out. But following that delay, the Senate bill would cut the public health insurance program more significantly than the House version. Both bills ultimately turn Medicaid into a block grant program, a significant transformation of one of the cornerstones of the nation's social safety net. And it sort of makes you think Republicans might care less about actually repealing the Affordable Care Act, as I'll mention here in a second, because a lot of portions of the ACA remain intact, and care more about striking a blow to Medicaid.
Yeah.
This is one of the more significant developments coming out of this legislation.
I think that the House version would cut Medicaid by something like $800 billion, billion with a B, over the next decade.
Yeah, and the Senate aims to do even more. Now, when it comes to actually repealing the ACA, as I mentioned, the Senate doesn't quite go as far as the House. Unlike the House bill, the Senate bill keeps in place the ACA's subsidies to help low-income Americans purchase health insurance, though they're tightened a bit. And that right there, folks, could be what leads to the bill's demise.
The one good-natured thing about it.
Yeah. Shortly after it was introduced, four Republicans came out and said they were opposed to it. The coalition was led by Senator Rand Paul. It included Senators Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, and Mike Lee, which, four members, that's enough to sink the bill. McConnell could only afford two defections on this bill. Rand Paul told MSNBC, quote, "It looks like we're keeping Obamacare, not repealing it." So all this likely throws a wrench in McConnell's plans to pass the bill before the end of next week. A CBO score isn't even expected until early next week. But McConnell's still full steam ahead. He blocked a motion by Minority Leader Schumer to have the bill posted with a CBO score online for 72 hours before it's considered in the Senate. McConnell objected to that. Senators could have shut down the Senate by now. Instead, they've cooperated with Republicans to pass things like Iranian sanctions and just today to approve of Trump's pick to head the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So protesters, many of them disabled, took matters into their own hands. They held a peaceful sit-in outside McConnell's office on Thursday. That lasted for a bit until Capitol Police came in and busted it up, dragging people out of their wheelchairs and hauling them off as they chanted about how the government wants them to die.
It's really incredible the way that Republicans would, on one hand, say that Obamacare made health insurance more expensive through subsidies, and yet they want to basically turn Medicaid into a giant subsidy, which health insurers will just milk that for all it's worth.
Yeah.
And now they, with the regulations repealed, they wouldn't even have to offer any real meaningful coverage. So I don't know, the shitty bronze plans you get under Obamacare or whatever they're called, the lowest tier plans.
Yeah.
The monthly premiums might go down a little bit, if at all. They'll probably eventually start to skyrocket with all the handouts to health insurers, and then their plans they'll cover less. Is all. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're gonna get shittier plans. People will get less support to get those plans, and with the strangling of Medicaid. We saw the proposed CBO score of the House bill, which had huge cuts to Medicaid. You know, a lot of the people that would be denied health insurance as a result of that, 23 million people. The Senate bill has even deeper cuts. You can expect that number would go up.
Well, at least the individual mandate would be gone, so you wouldn't be forced to buy these shitty plans.
Yeah, on top of all that, and speaking to the shitty plans, because they're so shitty because they no longer have these essential health benefits, things like reproductive care, things like drug treatment and therapy, mental health therapy. So when people actually need that stuff, they're going to have to really pay a lot more money out of pocket to get that stuff. So premiums are going to go up as well.
Ugh. Well, single payer, fam. That's what we need here. We're only in this Obamacare repeal mess because Democrats missed an open net in November, and special election losses earlier this week triggered more memories of Democrats' shortcomings, deficiencies that led to calls for Nancy Pelosi's resignation from some members of her caucus this week. In the wake of Tuesday's results, Congressman Philemon Vella told Politico, quote, "I think you'd have to be an idiot to think we could win the House with Pelosi at the top." And Kathleen Rice from New York told the publication, quote, "There comes a time when every leader has to say, for the good of the order and for the betterment of the party, it's time for me to step aside, and I wish that would happen right now." Significantly, both of these legislators backed Pelosi when she was challenged by Ohio's Tim Ryan in the caucus leadership election last year. Well, Pelosi had a chance to respond to criticism earlier today during her weekly press briefing on Capitol Hill. Here's some of what she said.
"But I don't think that members of a party should pick up the line of the Republicans. And that's what my members are coming back to me saying. Why are these people using their line? But I don't think that any party should allow the opposite party to choose their leaders."
Yes, the classic, look at my haters, look at all my haters, look at the totality of them.
Yeah, Tim Ryan's not a Republican.
Yeah, Tim Ryan's not a Republican.
And he's not taking his orders from Republicans.
No.
And I'm not even the biggest Tim Ryan fan here.
No, and Kathleen Rice, also not a Republican.
No.
Philemon Vela, not a Republican. But in Pelosi's mind, Democrats are calling for her to step down because they've been hoodwinked by Republicans. It's not because Democrats have lost significant power at every single fucking level of government since 2010. It's not because young people and independents have overwhelmingly unfavorable opinions of Pelosi, according to a poll just taken last month. People are criticizing Pelosi, according to her, because guess what? She's actually good.
She's too good. She's too spicy for Democrats.
Democrats think Pelosi too spicy. The House Minority Leader went on to elaborate when asked to justify her decision to stay in her position, one that she has held for 14 years. Take a listen to this.
So you want me to sing my praises? Is that what you're saying? Why should I? Well, I'm a master legislator. I am a strategic, politically astute leader. I am leadership is recognized by many around the country, and that is why I'm able to attract the support that I do, which is essential to our election, sad to say. I'm very pleased at the cooperation that we're doing, working with all the social media and...
All right, that's enough, right? I'm cutting her off at the posting braggadocio.
I'm a masturbator. Master debater.
My posts are great. People like my posts. I get retweets, faves. I mean, when she started, I thought she was kind of kidding, you know, like I'm a master legislator.
Yeah,
like I'm very politically astute. Oh, God, she's really going with this, huh? Wow. Pelosi also said that she was the target of vitriol because she helped pass Dodd-Frank and the Affordable Care Act. Two bills that made some progress, to be sure, although while granting giant carve-outs to the industry, in the case of Dodd-Frank, and massive subsidies and basically a bailout to an inefficient private health care system, in the case of Obamacare. And although Pelosi said that these two pieces of legislation made her the enemy of economic elites, she similarly made the case for keeping her job because she's good at raising money, only third in the Democratic Party to, quote, maybe only the Obamas and the Clintons. So, incredible scene, her press conference this morning.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with Pelosi that she is subject to a lot of vitriol from Republicans because she comes from San Francisco and she's considered one of the more liberal members, and she is a pretty liberal member.
And she did say that. She mentioned San Francisco.
Yeah, and she no doubt receives a lot of criticism because she is a woman as well. At the same time, she is in a position of power, which means that she should be held accountable and subject to criticism.
Yes.
And she has also been in a position of power for a while now.
Yeah.
And the results speak for themselves over the last 8 years.
They absolutely do. And we reported on this last month when she was asked about single payer, which Bernie Sanders re-energized the Democratic base talking about single payer. And how politically astute do you have to be to completely reject single payer as she did? She didn't even leave the door open. She didn't even say, well, maybe we can work with this and, you know, come up with something. She was just like, no. And then mocked the reporter and said, well, I was calling for single payer before you were born.
Yeah. And she, you know, she talks about her deft legislative touch and, you know, she has she gets credit for originally passing the public option in the first health care bill that passed the House. But, you know, they had to take a second vote in the House later without the public option.
Yep.
There was a reconciliation committee in which you had Pelosi there that could have held out for a public option and, you know, grabbed Ben Nelson by the nuts and threw him against the wall or something on this issue.
Yep.
And didn't. And that's one of the, you know, signature flaws of the Affordable Care Act right there.
Yeah. Yeah. If there was
other than the fact that it wasn't single payer.
Of course. But had there been a public option, it would have kept the private insurers honest at least. And none of that.
Pretty horrific news out of Yemen, where it appears the U.S. is once again operating in violation of international agreements against torture. The AP reports that in several secret prisons across Yemen, suspected al-Qaeda militants are interrogated by U.S. soldiers, and just down the hall, they're tortured and brutalized by United Arab Emirates forces. The AP found at least 18 secret prisons where this is going down. They're installed inside military bases, ports, airports, private villas, and even a nightclub. Reading from the AP's report here, it says, quote, several U.S. defense officials speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss the topic told AP that American forces do participate in interrogations of detainees at locations in Yemen, provide questions for others to ask, and receive transcripts of interrogations from Emirati allies. They said U.S. senior military leaders were aware of allegations of torture at the prisons in Yemen, looked into them, but were satisfied that there had not been any abuses when U.S. forces were present. But interviews that the AP had with former detainees, their families, lawyers, Yemeni government, and military officials tell a different story. They describe torture like being tied to a rod and turned over and over above a fire like you were being grilled on a spit. Other accounts included detainees being confined in containers filled with feces. All of this going on while U.S. soldiers were just yards away. Even if U.S. officials didn't directly engage in any of this torture, just obtaining intelligence that may have been extracted by torture would violate the International Convention Against Torture and could qualify as a war crime. That's according to NYU lawyer Ryan Goodman, who spoke to the AP. Of course, the U.S. has never really been in compliance with international law against torture for the last 15 years or so. Those agreements not only prohibit torture, but require that torturers be prosecuted, and President Obama explicitly chose not to do that when he assumed office in 2009. Might be one of the reasons why it looks like the U.S. is back on its torture bullshit again.
A country synonymous with warlordism and an absence of government is going to be graced with the presence of an American who is also synonymous with both of these things. The southwest state of Somalia has hired Frontier Services Group, a private security firm co-founded by Blackwater founder Eric Prince. The Hong Kong-based contractor said today, quote, it would provide logistics, aviation, and security services for a regional development project in Somalia. That's according to Reuters. Prince's Blackwater became infamous after its activities in Iraq. Blackwater guards were accused of committing atrocities, most notably the 2007 Nisour Square massacre in Baghdad. After earning well-deserved notoriety, Blackwater changed its name first to ZXE, then to Academy with an I, not a Y. And then after merging with Triple Canopy, the firm became known as Constellus Holding.
Jeez. Nothing shady going on here, folks.
Change its name more than, celebrity wrestler Prince, because he had the symbol for a while.
Yeah, Prince changed his name a lot. In general, professional wrestlers undergo many different identities throughout the course of their career.
You get the picture here.
Yeah.
Prince left Blackwater in 2010.
Or whatever you want to call it.
The company formerly known as Blackwater in 2010. After it was sold, Prince also... I just realized I made a Prince joke, and the guy's name is Eric Prince. That could be confusing to some listeners, and I deeply apologize. Anyway, Eric Prince reportedly also advised the Trump transition team, according to Bloomberg News. The Washington Post reported that Eric Prince... met with Russian officials in the Seychelles in January. Of course, not the lead singer, the singer Prince. He passed away in 2016.
He's got an alibi. And finally, I regret to inform you all, there are no Comey tapes.
As long as there are P tapes.
Maybe. In a pair of tweets, President Trump walked back his initial threat that James Comey, the fired FBI director, better hope that there aren't tapes of the conversation between the two of them. Trump said, quote, with all of the recently reported electronic surveillance, intercepts, unmasking, and illegal leaking of information, I have no idea whether there are tapes of recordings of my conversation with James Comey, but I did not make and do not have any such recordings. So that's most likely that, assuming he's telling the truth. Source told Bloomberg that Trump raised the possibility of tapes in a strategic fashion to ensure that Comey told the truth. Anyway, I know we all wanted the Comey tape. We believed it might be out there somewhere. It looks like it's not. But at least we can still hold out hope for that P tape.
Remember when I hate to sound like a Cher Blue dipshit, but remember when Republicans wanted to impeach Bill Clinton for lying about sex-related things.
Yeah.
He just openly admitted to lying deliberately about wiretapping his FBI director.
Yeah, nothing to see here, folks.
I mean, honestly, I don't actually give a shit. It's just funny to me. This is all just extremely funny.
I'm laughing. We've been laughing all day about this. Finally, tonight, one last thing. Tonight is the NBA draft. The Wizards don't have a first-round pick. They traded it probably for some bullshit. But we got a caller here. It's Jorts, and I figure this is a good day to play the message he called earlier this week, reminiscing about some 90s basketball.
Hi, Sam. It's your friend Jorts Authority calling back about that sweet game NBA Jam that we all know and love. I believe you are correct, Sam Knight, that it was Charles Barkley and Kevin Johnson and Sam Sachs. Yes, how could I forget Thunder Dan Marley? I suppose I had eaten so many Marley bars, I'd forgotten and wanted to forget his name from the wretched taste of the Marley bar. And of course we must mention, Kevin Johnson, who, not only was a great point guard, but is also great at, punching, people's faces up and getting away with it. Honorable mentions go to Danny Ainge. Him and Thunder Dan did trade off quite a few threes. And also big shout out to my youthful disappointment in 92, during game 7, when we lost by 2 points. But hey, the Phoenix Suns, this is the thing, you know, they may be a pretty garbage team regularly and oftentimes trading away great players for shitty draft picks. But in 1992 against Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, we went to Game 7. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, and sorry on behalf, allow me to apologize on behalf of all non-racist Arizonans for the Martin Luther King vote. That was awful. I was a child. Please don't email me or at me. Love you guys. Have a wonderful week.
I don't know what he's talking about with the Martin Luther King thing.
The Arizona was one of the only states to vote against MLK, or the delegation to vote against MLK as a national holiday, holiday.
Jesus.
Yeah. George makes a good point, and I was thinking about this when I heard George's message, that you look back on the Jordan era Bulls as this team that was legendary, and it was unbeatable. You don't look at the Phoenix Suns that way at all, of course, but they came within a game 7. I think that game 7 was very close. We'll leave it to the fact checkers, the interns, to check how close that game 7 was. But that would have changed history had the Suns won that 1992 championship.
Yeah, yeah, and the double three-peat.
Maybe not.
Well, the double three-peat wouldn't have had the – well, I guess it wasn't a
you
double.
You would have had a back-to-back and a three-peat.
Yeah.
That's the show today. Listeners, call our rant line. Leave a message. That number is 202-684-6108. We got sponsors to thank. Chris Simpson, the Congressional Dish podcast, hosted by Jen Briney at congressionaldish.com and levelnews.org. Listen to this episode and all other episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or Stitcher or TuneIn by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. Patreon subscribers, you'll hear from us tomorrow for the Sentinel cast, along with Rachel Curzius and
Piss Pig Granddad.
Everyone else, we're back Monday for the newscast. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.